In this episode of the Flophouse, we do our best to stay conscious while watching Awake. This is the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
My name is Elliot Kalin.
As you might be able to hear from your ears, or or
unless there are problems with you, or you're hearing through something else,
or if for some reason you're listening to the podcast in reverse order and you're listening to the outtakes first, you probably know by now that we have extra microphones. So hopefully the
please keep your excitement to a minimum.
Yeah, well, no, but you can actually hear things. Unlike, say, last episode when you, Elliot, were completely inaudible.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah.
Oh, you don't listen to the show. I understand. That's fine.
I know. I rushed home to listen to my own voice, because, and then I, as soon as I heard that I wasn't audible, I stopped.
You're making me feel kind of bad about listening to the podcast at work.
Yeah, the thing is that, like,
I hope your boss makes you feel bad about that.
So wait, are you guys saying that when you listen to it, you don't just like put it on and like listen to your friends talking about stuff, and you're like, oh, Dan and Elliot are in the room with
also,
me. Yay!
Also, I don't know if you're aware of this, Elliot. I'm not a segment producer on The Daily Show. I file things for a living. So I can pretty much do that while listening to a podcast.
You're telling me you can sit for more than 5 minutes at a time at your desk without having to go do something.
Oh. You kind of have carte blanche when it comes to what you're allowed to listen to.
Yeah, that is, I would say, the one perk of my job. Well, no, two perks.
Listen, it's not a perfect job, but I can't control your ears. You listen to whatever you want to listen to. I'm not the boss of your ears. I'm just the boss of you, McCoy.
Yeah. To sum up, if you work in an admissions office, you spend a lot of time opening the mail and putting that mail into manila envelopes.
To sum up, microphones. Oh, what were you going to say, Steve?
I was just going to say that you're slowly painting a picture of who Dan McCoy is. Yeah. Like, I work in an admissions office. I have a cat. I like movies.
There's a Harvey Pekar element to this.
Sure.
Little bits of it. Tell us about your trip to the bank the other day.
You know what? Let's just cut out the whole movie element of this podcast. Now that we've got three microphones, I feel like we can get a lot more intimate with callers.
Sure. With callers, eh? I think I hear one coming.
First time, long
Dracula.
Time. I'm listening to your podcast right now. Can you hear me? No, we can't hear you. This was recorded. If you're calling in now, I don't know who you're talking to. Sure. Okay, well, I guess I'll call in next time. Don't. It's going to be recorded again.
Yeah. I don't even know how you know what this person is saying.
I don't know. Yeah,
they apparently called a dummy number somewhere. But with
that's actually a more exciting movie than the movie we just watched.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's very true.
We watched the movie Awake, starring Hayden Christensen and
can't make a bad film.
Flophouse favorite Jessica Alba.
I just want to get it. This might start controversy and get us off track. I don't have the same blind worship for Jessica Alba that many have, it seems. I don't think she's all that attractive when it comes down to it.
You know, but what about her acting ability?
She's an amazing actress. No, I mean, she's a, you know, the Vanessa Redgrave type. Can play anything, but
you know, I don't have the blind worship that a lot of people seem to, but I have the same feeling. I think we discussed this with Jessica Biel before. Not a woman that personally, like, I find attractive, but objectively I'm like, that is an amazing body.
See, Jessica Biel I do find attractive, but even with Alba, it's just I don't, you know.
It's not an issue of whether or not I find her really attractive or anything. It's that simply it's one more step along my goal to see literally every woman alive naked at some point in my life. So
that is a lofty ambition.
You know, I'm allowed to shoot high.
Yeah.
How are you doing? I'm guessing you're doing infinitely poorly.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's only if you're counting people who died before he had the chance to start this quest.
I guess it was every woman alive. Okay,
you're never good.
It's not infinitely poorly. I'm probably in the billions poorly, though.
The problem is, I have to admit, a lot of the ones I've seen naked, already dead.
Wow, that's you're the
kind of to blame.
You're the voyeuristic kind of gravedigger. It's so much harder to keep this conversation on track when there are three microphones, isn't it, Dan? Editing this will be a nightmare now that you've instituted this three microphone system.
Seems so good.
What a godsend.
I'm still shocked that apparently Stewart's the heavy in a late night Cinemax film.
Like the guy from Kindergarten Cop and
yeah, late night Cinemax films like Kindergarten Cop.
No, I'm saying the bad guy in Kindergarten Cop who is the romantic lead in Two Moon Junction, the Zalman King movie.
Oh, okay. So Awake, huh?
Yes, Awake.
Shouldn't you be keeping us on track, Dan?
You want to do any like summary or lead in
of what? Awake?
Yeah.
I was trying to. I was saying that Hayden Christensen and Jessica Alba starred in it, which.
Chemistry. A lot of chemistry.
Yeah. Well.
Their chemistry was just a little less powerful than, like, a baking soda and vinegar volcano.
Sure, but, that's fair.
But a little more powerful than Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman in the Star Wars films.
Yeah.
Star Wars films?
Oh, that's right. I forgot. You had that lobotomy.
Yeah. Films?
But do you want to go over what happens in this movie, or should we just get into talking about the most passive protagonist in film history?
Well, I think that my introduction will sort of segue into that, because...
segue into that.
Oh, Jesus. Pedantic.
All I'm saying, you said seg instead of segue. The last time I watched a movie, the guys, you said Lohan instead of Lohan. Mm. You have a way of pronouncing things all your own.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's keep moving. And I was going to say that... The movie starts with there's some very serious text up on the screen saying this many people get anesthesia every year, some large number. And out of those people who are anesthetized,
very nice.
This smaller number of them have this horrible thing happen where they are awake in mind and they can feel the pain, but they can't move. And this is, you know, apparently, I mean, I remember when this movie came out. What little attention there was about it focused on the fact that this is something that happens to people, although more rarely than the movie would suggest.
And you remember, since the movie came out, there's been a huge increase in attention paid to this problem.
It's basically an issue film.
Was a flashpoint for social change.
It's just like all those movies that are about, like, you know, killer crocodiles or something, and they open the movie with a text that's like, every year, 10,000 people go into the bayou or hang out around.
2,000 come back.
2,000 come back. A bunch never come back.
Well, I know that after the John Sayles scripted alligator, the number of alligators that were flushed down the toilet went dramatically down because they were afraid that they would grow giant and Robert Forster would not be there to save them.
I don't care for John Sayles.
That's a conversation for another day.
It is. Okay, yeah, it is. That's for when we watch Casa de los Babies on the Flophouse.
It didn't do that well theatrically. So I think it might
technically
count.
A flop.
Silver City. But to go back to this movie, which apparently we have no interest in discussing.
Well, that's this is of the times I've watched movies with you guys, which I think is two now.
All the times we've watched movies for other reasons?
No, yeah, but not count even when we've watched bad movies to make fun of them in the past, like, this is the least paying attention I think we've ever been to. Like, we just were not engaged in this film. It was boring from start to finish. With small moments of weirdness, but for the most part, it was shot in a very in a static way. It was acted in a static way. The music was static. The story was static in that the main character, if you don't mind me going into the plot a little bit.
No, please.
The main character is wealthy. His mother disagrees with his choice of bride. He goes in for a heart surgery because he has a weak heart, even though he's a young man. It turns out everyone in the world is conspiring to murder him. His mother sacrifices her life to save him, and he does basically nothing the entire movie except lie there and complain, and does not help in any way or accomplish anything.
What does he really have to live for? I mean, he doesn't have any friends. I mean, his best man is the doctor who tried to kill him, and so's his fucking wife.
And the only other friend we see of his is very briefly a man dressed as Dracula at a costume party that he throws in his office.
Who initially, in one of the deleted scenes, I think, recommends that they go out and look at strippers, which obviously paints him as a negative influence in his life.
Right.
And before I forget, this is something that we brought up while we were watching the movie. Directors out there, if you're making a movie that requires a scene with a lot of big exposition in it, please don't set that scene at a Halloween costume party. Because as happened, we were watching this. Hayden Christensen is talking about the business he's doing with these Japanese business people, and it seems like it's important to the movie. It's not, but it seems like it is. And there's a guy in a bear suit wanders by in the background, and Dracula's there, and you just can't help but pay more attention to the bear.
It seems like maybe they watched that scene in Indiana Jones.
A literal monster mash.
The director watched that scene in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, where Spielberg was like, "All right, I got to do a lot of exposition about the Tuggy cult. I'll have this dinner scene, and exposition will happen, and then also there'll be a bunch of gags about crazy, gross food." But in that case, he went back and forth between the two, rather than having like zany food being brought out.
rather than having two people having a very serious conversation, and then a monkey with its head top of its head chopped off just walked by in the background, leading the audience to think, "Oh, what the hell? What is that all about? Why am I not looking at that?"
That monkey's going to come back into play.
It's that story about that monkey.
If I see a monkey with the top of its head cut off in Act 1, I know it's going to go off in Act 3.
Is that monkey under anesthesia? I wonder. It's crying. Oh, no.
Now, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but the thing is, the thing about that anesthesia plot is, and we were discussing this, as my lovely wife pointed out, it has no bearing on anything.
Yeah, it's completely unrelated to the rest of the film.
It's one of the most interesting ideas in the movie, this idea of, like, it would be truly horrific if you were, you know, completely paralyzed, you could feel everything, but were going under the knife for, like, major heart surgery. However, that basically does not play into anything.
There's only about 6 minutes of that in, what is it, an 81-minute film?
Right, and he doesn't even seem to like be going through that much pain. He immediately goes into that sort of a Wesley and the Princess Bride thing, where he's like, "I'm going to put my brain in another happier place, and thus the pain will not affect me." And so you're not engaged at all.
He seems really focused on astral projecting and running around like he's fucking Doctor Strange or something, trying to solve the mystery by going back in time.
But that's the thing. Well, he basically just goes back into his memories and either relives them or mopes around. While he's dicking around in his subconscious, his mom is uncovering a murder ring and doing all sorts of exciting things.
His subconscious dicking around, as you say, solves things for us, the audience, but it doesn't actually do anything to affect the action of the film. Basically, not to spoil anything, but Hayden Christensen is completely paralyzed for the movie, and then he dies temporarily. Meanwhile, his mom, Lena Olin,
played by
hot mom Lena Olin,
who we've been led to believe in the beginning is a monster, basically.
Right.
Doesn't want her son to talk to anybody, disapproves of his wife.
Momzilla.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. But it's basically the mom of the Manchurian Candidate, like a monster.
Yeah, but then we discover that she's just really passionate about her son. I think passionate is the right word with sort of the weird vibes you get from it. But she also turns into this super detective, and she puts everything together in time to kill herself so that her son can have her heart. So she solves everything and saves him while he's completely just lying on the table. He's he's literally the most passive protagonist in a movie ever.
But Fisher Stevens goes to jail at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Yeah, in case anyone was watching it just for Fisher Stevens' part.
Probably just Fisher Stevens would watch that part.
Well, it's interesting. Like, Fisher Stevens is on Lost recently.
Well, yeah, one episode.
One episode. Died. Well, the thing was, like, they made
spoiler
a
spoiler alert. Fisher Stevens, yeah, if you're watching that episode of Lost, you die.
Sorry if you're behind on Lost, if you're watching it on DVD. But
I don't say how he died. I didn't say it was like the smoke monster or something.
But it was funny because there was a lot of press around Fisher Stevens being on Lost.
True. I seem to have missed that.
You haven't been reading Big Bopper or Teen Beat.
This is talking from someone who spent a good amount of time today while I was working looking at Rene Auberjonois, or Harry Prince's last name's, webpage. And remembering that, oh yeah, he did play Odo in Deep Space Nine. I forgot about that. I know him better from his work with Robert Altman. Yeah, I forgot he was on Benson, you know.
But they played up, oh, Fisher Stevens is going to be on Lost, as if everyone was supposed to be like, oh, big name star, Fisher Stevens is going to be on Lost. And then everyone,
extra,
you know,
extra read all about
and
it.
And then you're disappointed that he dies in one episode. And, you know, granted.
But oh, what a death.
I was excited that Fisher Stevens was on Lost, but I think that's mainly because I remember him fondly as Ben from Short Circuit and Short Circuit 2.
Wasn't he? I remember him as the bad guy in the movie Hackers.
Yeah, he was that.
He rides a skateboard, I think.
Ugh. Well, that was back when people didn't know a lot about Hackers.
Unlike nowadays.
They're really trying to sell us on the whole cyberpunk concept. Like, I bet these people who are really good at computers are going to be really cool, too. They do a lot of extreme sports.
I watched Live Free, Die Hard recently.
Yeah.
And, I still haven't seen that.
There's a lot of hackers in that, so be prepared.
Okay. Consider everybody warned.
But unlike in Short Circuit, Fisher Stevens was not playing an Indian man.
A likably caricatured Indian man.
Yeah.
His head's getting bigger.
And his neck's getting smaller.
It's strange.
He's like a turtle who's had his shell removed. That's pretty much Fisher Stevens out in a nutshell, but
he's
out
got
of a shell.
Weird haircut, too.
If there's a movie where they need to cast someone who's a turtle, like that's in the casting breakdown, turtle with shell removed.
Like if there's a Ninja Turtles movie where there's an old turtle whose shell has fallen apart over the years, Fisher Stevens is the guy to cast in that role.
So Fisher Stevens, if you're listening, and I know you are,
old patchwork shell, like what the fuck?
Get your
is
agent.
It like a Ninja Turtle hobo character?
Or he's just, he's been, you know, he's hundreds of years old. Turtles live a long time.
Now, the thing is that both Fisher Stevens and that character actor that played the anesthesiologist.
Christopher McDonald.
Yeah, the two of those guys have such iconic hairdos. Like, do you think that they go to one, they've been going to the same barber for like years? Like, I'm talking about fucking years. Just to keep that like iconic.
I don't know. Look. I mean, they might just have a photo that they bring to the barber and are like, make it look like this,
sure.
Which is what many people
don't
do.
Don't you think they already have that photo like posted on the wall that's like signed?
Yeah. Make it look like my autographed headshot.
So when people go to that like salon, they're like, oh shit, Fisher Stevens, really? Can I get that?
No, no, that's only for Mr. Stevens. No, no. Hey, Gino, how's it going? Ah, Fisher! Ah, we got your chair, right? You know, and so forth.
I don't know that they're... I mean, I guess that they're...
Those are an Italian barber, I assume.
I haven't actually encountered an Italian barber outside of, like, a gangster film.
I have to say, I've had one Italian barber. You're right. Most of the barbers I've had have been Greek, or my current one is Russian, who hires Israelis.
Yeah, I would say that, I mean, in New York,
I will not
at
get
least.
My hair cut by a native-born American. They don't do as good a job. This is a just, fascinating topic related to the movie Awake.
Sociological study of barbers in New York City.
I cut my own hair, guys.
Yeah. Well, it looks fantastic.
Flippers. Thanks.
I wish that this was a video podcast.
So we could see the hair, yeah.
Just how good it looks.
Yeah, that's weird.
But, yeah.
Well, let's talk about the length of this movie. This movie was 80 minutes long.
And felt padded at that.
Yeah.
I feel.
As
they don't get into the action until, like, what, 40 minutes in?
Yeah. He doesn't go under the knife until, yeah, like 40, 45 minutes into the movie.
A lot of exciting stuff before that, huh?
Well, as...
Not.
Oh!
No way.
Oh!
Well, I mean, as...
They do a lot of setting up how Hayden Christensen's company works, which is forgotten as soon as he gets to the hospital.
Right.
There's really no reason for us to know. There's a moment where the TV mentions something about mobsters, right, or something like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of red herrings at the beginning. Well, as my friends Matt and Jeff say, this was a handsome length for a movie. Like, as I get older, I find that I've got a little less attention span for movies, and I appreciate older movies, for instance. A lot of older movies, 80 minutes long, you know, a lot of the Universal horror films. Like,
yeah, less than 90 minutes.
An hour, maybe, even. And I appreciate that brevity. This film spent a half an hour setting up the idea that, one, Hayden Christensen is rich. Two, he's going to marry Jessica Alba, but he's keeping that from his mom. And three, he has a heart problem, and he's going to go under the knife for it.
Now, a talented screenwriter would be able to get all this information out within the first scene of the film,
right.
I feel like.
Yeah.
Pan from heart pills on bedside table. Pan to Hayden Christensen and Jessica Alba in bed. Maybe one is hugging the other one, and
she reaches over and turns down a picture of his mom.
Or that's pretty economical. I was thinking more like they wake up and they kiss. Hey, how's it going? Only 3 more weeks until we're married. Oh no, that's my mom. You gotta get out of here.
Exactly.
She doesn't approve of our relationship.
Then you have a little bit of comedy as she leaves through the fire escape.
Exactly. Then get him to the hospital.
Right.
Maybe tripping over a penguin.
But then,
let's rewrite the script.
It felt like this was a movie.
Let's rewrite into a 30-minute episode of Tales.
I feel like if we digitized this movie, we could probably edit it down right now to 22 minutes with commercial breaks.
A tight 22.
This could easily, it felt like a throwback to an era of half-hour anthology television shows. But they went, someone dusted off. We were talking about it felt like an Alfred Hitchcock Presents episode.
I think it was it was cribbed from that, right?
Yeah.
And then they're like, hey, let's take three murder mysteries and just smash it in here as well.
Yeah, it was like an old man, an old TV, Richard Matheson had this script lying around his home and blew some dust off it and went, Rod Serling, of course. You know what? I could probably bump this up into a feature if I throw some murder mystery in there. Then I'll write another book.
It was the classic paralyzed guy can't tell people, what's going on concept. But then also, there's a whole subplot, very small subplot, but significant ultimately, about his father who had died, but he couldn't remember much about him except for, he died on Christmas. He had fallen down off the stairs wearing, a Santa Claus suit. And in the end, it turns out that his mom had killed him.
Because he was an abusive husband and father.
Yeah. And again, the Santa Claus murder element feels like another Alfred Hitchcock Presents. So they just they took 75% of one script and 25% of another and put them together.
And I mean, having recently rewatched Silent Night, Deadly Night, which is also a movie about an abusive person dressed up in a Santa Claus outfit.
A better movie, frankly.
Yes. At least in that movie, the guy grows up to be a crazy murdering Santa Claus instead of a crazy, boring, heart problem having guy.
I gotta say, that costume party was which was probably a whim on the part of the screener. I'll just set the scene, a costume party. The moment you see Hayden Christensen dressed as an admiral or as some sort of
I thought he was
soldier,
a Jedi.
He's wearing a dress uniform or maybe he's a Marine, actually, and a ton of medals. You're like, this movie just got a little bit more interesting. Oh, it's a Halloween costume. Never mind.
Yeah.
The fact that the one Halloween costume he wears has more plot potential than most of the film.
I think we should institute, by the way, something on the Flophouse called the Quirk Alert. Because I think often...
Okay, it's a good name.
Do you have anything to back it up?
Is there a sound effect?
It has to be something like boy, oy, oy, or something like that.
Excellent. I'll work on it. But we've talked about it in a lot of previous episodes.
So we're going to be watching Juno, is what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that often in
I can read the two.
Often in these movies, we call out something that clearly the screenwriter threw in. It's like, something interesting, some sort of interesting character trait or something wacky needs to be part of this film. And in this movie, Hayden Christensen and Terrence Howard, what they do together is they fish in the East River.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
They go fishing in the East River together.
Terrence Howard was also an amateur photographer, so he had a lot of hobbies, this doctor.
Well, it's cool. He barely has time for all his doctoring. I wonder if...
Oh, and that's the other thing. He goes to the hospital. The choices of doctor for his heart surgery are his best friend and best man at the wedding, another doctor he knows well, and his mom's semi-boyfriend, I guess, who's a famous doctor who says, and this is the best line in the entire movie, I've had my hands inside presidents. Or my hands have been inside... But what hospital lets someone be... have a surgeon who knows the patient well working on them? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't actually know. I don't know hospital procedure. I'm going to assume you're right, though.
Well, we don't realize this. He's a philanthropist. He built a hospital inside his house. So that's why they all know him.
That makes more sense.
That makes a lot of sense. The thing, as far as the fishing in the East River, it totally felt when I was watching that the screenwriter-director, Joby something or other.
Let's call him Joby something or other.
I think he was like, fuck, I don't know how to set the scene. What do I do? And then he's like, ring, ring, ring. Oh, who's that on the phone? Nicolas Cage? Hey, Nicolas Cage. What should I have these characters do? No, they're not. They can't eat Skittles and talk about the Carpenters. Fish in the East River? Absolutely. Hot dog. Talk to you later, buddy. Yeah, we'll go to Buffalo Wild Wings later. Okay, peace. That's what it felt like. I just imagined that scene. That's the scene of the life of Joby What's-His-Name.
And Nicolas Cage, script doctor.
Well, Nicolas Cage is full of great ideas for character traits that are totally unrelated to the character or action of the film.
So I feel like we don't have a lot of juice to talk about this movie, but I do want to, you know, before we start winding down, another thing that was kind of odd about this movie is one of these movies where while the guy is dying or comatose or whatever, you know, he does, as you say, has his out-of-body experiences, and he wanders around, and he then has conversations, say, with his... He has a conversation with his mom, who has killed herself, so, you know...
So that he may live.
Yeah, and at the end, they're losing him. He doesn't want to come back because he's talking to his mom, and then once they finish that conversation, he can come back.
His heart starts... Dude?
I'm sorry.
You having heart problems?
Getting choked up.
I am getting choked up. It was a sad scene.
Suddenly the movie hit him. He could relate.
Oh, wait, I get it now. This was a brilliant
movie. It was beautiful.
But no, once he decides to live again, obviously then the heart monitor starts up again. And that always pisses me off in movies because that's not the way life works.
Oh my God, he's doing it.
He's made the decision to live in this metaphysical conversation he may or may not be having. Now his heart starts beating again.
My least favorite one of those is also from another Hayden Christensen movie, Star Wars Episode III, in which a robot, a thing without emotions that it can only see, cause should only be able to understand facts, says as, what's her name, Luke and Leia's mom.
Padme,
thank you. I forgot her made-up bullshit name that George Lucas came up with. As
like the real name of Luke and Leia.
Those are real names. Those Skywalkers. And that's pretty dumb. But you want to hide the most evil man in the universe's son, but you don't bother to change his last name from Skywalker.
That's illegal in the future.
Skywalker must be like Smith the robot, Luke and Leia's mother delivers the babies and then dies, and the robot says, "It's as if she lost the will to live." Really? Nurse Medi Robot? Is that your professional opinion? That she willed herself into dying?
Look, they understand medicine better in the past. With their midichlorians and such.
Yes.
But this was kind of like that, where it's like...
Gay robots.
The message seems to be like, listen, dead people, you should have tried harder, or else you'd still be alive.
Burn.
It's really weird now. Now, if in the future, Hayden Christensen's character in Awake, like later on, okay, this is, you know, years down the road, Jessica Alba's in prison.
Later on, he joins the New Republic.
He
starts fabricating stories.
No, that was actually an okay movie. But
that's the best Hayden Christensen film.
Maybe he falls in love with a new girl. He has his mom's heart. Does that make it a lesbian romance? Dan, answer
wow.
me.
Wow.
If I'm forced to imagine Hayden Christensen having sex with a woman and Lena Olin having sex with a woman, I will go with a lesbian romance.
I like the idea more that he has his mom's heart in him now, so out of nowhere he starts drinking a lot of martinis, smoking Virginia Slims, wearing support hose. He has a lot of hot flashes. He doesn't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Reading Red Book all the time. Ever since I got my mom's heart, I've been so much more interested in watching Lifetime. I don't understand.
He acts like weirdly possessed, maybe talks with a slight weird accent. Where the fuck is she from, dude?
I like your understanding, Elliot, of what middle-aged women
they read Red Book. And they have hot flashes, and they drink and they smoke Virginia Slims.
Sure,
that's what they do.
Yep.
Maybe she tapes Guiding Light, something like that. Sure. And watches it.
Mm. Falls asleep watching TV. Oh wait, that's my mom.
Drunk in the recliner.
That's my mom. Okay. So awkward. Mom's listening. So Awake.
Yeah, I guess
It was pretty good. It was pretty scary.
Talk about.
You talk about how terrible and boring it is, and then you're like, so Awake, thumbs up.
Terrifying.
10 out of 10.
Now, we should...
I don't like to throw the word masterpiece around a lot.
This one earns it.
We haven't done this in a while because, last week we had our awards floptacular. Last full show. And then before that...
Horribly gone wrong.
Good Luck Chuck, which was so bad that we totally discarded the idea of rating it.
Sure.
But now we return to the patented Flophouse rating system.
By the way, I will say, having listened to the podcast for Good Luck Chuck, you were talking about how strangely explicit the sex scenes were, I said, surely they weren't that bad. And we did the trouble of looking on the internet for research photos of these scenes. They were really surprising in the amount of explicit quality that was in that film.
Yeah.
So you guys were right.
So
You hear that? Hear that? We were right.
If for some reason you want to see Dane Cook having sex with a bunch of women.
I was blind for 7 minutes after I saw those pictures.
Good luck, Chuck. On the internet. Because that has everything.
Mm-hmm. Like podcasts.
Such as popular bad movie podcasts. Or unpopular ones. That's the case. But to get on to our final judgment on Awake. So, would you say that this is a movie that you didn't like at all? A movie that you thought was a good movie as a bad movie? Or a movie that you actually kind of liked a bit? So, I'm going to go to Elliot with this question. Because he's currently rubbing his nose with a handkerchief.
Now that I'm blowing my nose, is the best time to talk. I will say that I guess it's so much of a non-movie that it almost falls outside of the normal rating system. Like I didn't enjoy it at all, but it like almost wasn't bad enough to raise my ire. You know, if I was eating, it's like if I'm sitting down and eating Cheerios as a snack, it's like, all right. I mean, this is not really particularly that delicious, but
breath smell.
But yeah, but it's not like it tastes terrible. It's like eating cardboard. It's, you know, this was like watching a cardboard movie.
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a pretty good summary. Like, I didn't like it, and I don't want other people to watch it. but I don't. It's not to the point that I'm like mad, and I want to punch them in the eyes so they can't watch the movie. You know.
Yeah. Wait, you would take that anger out on the person watching the movie, not on the filmmaker.
That's the thing. Like, I can't stop them. They've already made the movie, but I can stop people from watching it.
We are in perfect agreement about the non-qualities of this film, because I don't think it's a bad enough. Like, it's nowhere near funny in its badness.
Can I just restate that?
That's very true.
I mean, I don't know how objective we are right now.
Right.
But arguably, this podcast is either A, longer than the movie, or B, significantly more interesting. There's been more twists in this fucking podcast than there were in the fucking movie.
Yeah, you know, one thing I will say there's a good movie in there somewhere.
Find the silver lining.
Like, when Lena Olin discovers what the plot was, I have to say, you know, I turned to you guys and I was like, you know what? The clues that she's putting together were scattered through the movie. They weren't, like, obvious. There's no point at which I'm like, that's going to become significant. Later, but then
that's true. The clues were well hidden, and
they made sense.
Yeah, you did.
And they made sense, but they weren't. But the thing is, almost like to the point of, oh yeah, those were clues, huh? Well, there was no moment of like, of course, I didn't even notice. It was like, oh yeah, clues. What are you gonna do? I guess it happens. I don't know.
She was trying to kill her.
But there's like for a movie with a double twist, this is
it did not raise the blood pressure at any point.
But also the idea of a woman killing herself so her son who shares her rare blood type can receive a heart transplant is after she sheltered him to a certain extent his whole life is an interesting one. But it was so like even considering how super melodramatic that is, but like even that kind of came off as there's something about woman kills self so son can have heart that should be like what. That like either that's really dramatic or that's insane. But here it's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
That's the rational solution.
Like, my favorite bit is nobody at no point addresses that she did that. Like the doctor who looks like Ben Kingsley's weird low rent brother shows up and he's like, oh, I guess she's dead. Prep the surgery room.
Yeah, no one puts two and two together.
You're not like, oh my god, she died to kill her son. Wait. I fucked that one up. She died to save her son.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently he puts two and two together enough that immediately after realizing that she's beyond resuscitation, he's like, well, better get this heart out and put it in the other guy.
Because I'll tell you, because that's a good doctor. His hands have been inside presidents. Yeah.
Next Surgeon General,
next Surgeon General, he says at one point.
I want my Surgeon General to be able to read those signs.
It felt like that kind of stuff should have been exciting, but I can imagine the director doing 20, 25 takes to bleed the energy out of these actors and like prep the surgery. We've only got so much time. Whoa, Ben's brother. Take it down a notch. Take it down a couple notches. It was like if Antonioni had made a medical thriller for television.
Yeah.
You know, we're not getting the ennui out of this murder situation. Damn classy of me to mention Antonioni.
Yeah, good job, dude.
Raised the tenor of this podcast significantly.
Yes.
But I would have liked it, I think I said, during if Lena Olin had figured out what was going on and then decided to kill Jessica Alba and steal her heart.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been exciting.
Or if she killed herself just enough to turn into a ghost to talk to Hayden Christensen to find out the plan and then come back to do that. She's like, you need to bring me back from the dead in 5 minutes.
Well, that basically happens in The Frighteners, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, what I'm trying to say is I'd rather watch The Frighteners.
Yeah, well, that's a sentiment I think we can all agree with.
Or hey, if,
Peter Jackson's best movie.
Jake Busey.
She used her her power cosmic to commune with Hayden Christensen's ghost and teach him how to kill Jessica Alba.
If there was a fucking, like, medicine man or something...
There were doctors in the film.
Yeah, but
technically
no,
those are medicine men.
No,
they're
but
men
I mean
of medicine. Men of
yeah,
medicine. But you mean like a shaman or something?
Yeah, I was playing. I was playing Cranium this weekend, and it was
like where this story
the question was like something like Native American god or something, and I'm looking at like the you know it's like fill in the blanks or some shit, and I'm like, wait, does that say Great Spirit? That's really a god. Like that's really stupid sounding, but apparently I was right. So it was Great Spirit. So Medicine Man, Great Spirit. It was just a really weird situation.
And okay.
Medicine Man, starring Sean Connery and Lorraine Bracco.
Not yeah. a weird situation.
I discovered the cure for cancer and then I lost it. That's the best line in a commercial.
It's
ever.
In the trailer.
And then, it's in the trailer,
in the Amazon somewhere.
The best way goes, you know, like you lose your keys. And it's like, he says this as if it's a perfectly fine explanation for how it happened.
That's the best movie about finding the cure for cancer that also involves swinging around from trees. So.
I think you could just say best movie about finding a cure for cancer.
I wonder when they pitch that movie if they're like, poster has Sean Connery with a ponytail and his shirt's open. Enough said.
100 mil opening weekend. I remember very well as a fifth grader at school, my teacher coming in one day and saying, saw Medicine Man this weekend. It was very disappointing. If they'd focused on the Amazonian tribes more and less on the plot, it would have been a better movie. And as a kid saying, why did you expect them to make a movie about Amazonian tribes?
I want to commend it though for a taking a brave anti deforestation pro curing cancer stance.
Not a lot of movies are willing to go off on that ledge.
Yeah,
it's a tough call.
Oh man, let's
That's,
talk about
someone told mentioned an anti war movie once to me. I forget which one it was, and they were like, "Wow, I can." And it was like, really, they took that brave stance. Like the person was really in all of this anti war film. I was like, they came out against war. Okay, well.
It's like a sappy rock song about why you shouldn't beat up your wife, how it's bad. I'm like, no shit, really? Thanks, Third Eye Blind, or I don't know, Nickelback. I think that's a better band.
I believe it's the same band with different names. They just It's like Chris Gaines and Garth Brooks.
Matchbox 20, that's a band, right?
Yeah, it is, Dan. Good job.
All right.
You're confused a band that's been around for about 13 years.
Let me check the internet.
I'm just getting ready for being an old man.
I think you're there.
I know.
I think you've gotten ready. I stopped by your house once when I was walking in the neighborhood, and it was about 3 o'clock on Sunday, and you were in your pajamas.
I don't know if that's old man stuff. I mean, like, a responsible adult would have been up since 6 a.m. accomplishing many things. Whereas I was busy putting CDs on my iPod. So
and watching Medicine Man.
Oh, this is best work after Zardoz.
What about the Avengers?
The Avengers, he does good work in also. And League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Sure.
Yep. Those are all bad movies.
With Sean Connery in them.
We're good at listing bad Sean Connery films.
Entrapment.
Yeah.
Entrapment's one of the few movies that was sold on the – they're implying in the commercials, you'll get to see Catherine Zeta-Jones' butt with pants on.
Like,
it was sold really? On one shot of her butt.
I don't think
and
they
it's
were
like,
implying that. I think they were expressly saying
it. But like, it was never implied like, she might get naked in this movie. It was just, look at this. See what you can see in the movie again, but bigger.
She's gonna be sneaking under a laser. Wish she'd be sneaking under your lasers,
hey,
huh?
Hey, buddy. Hey, that was a successful ad campaign.
It was a very successful ad campaign. Entrapment, that's police talk. You should have said blackmail. No, entrapment is a term people use all the time.
You're gonna get sued by whoever writes those Sean Connery movies. All right, come on. Let's talk about good movies. Movies that we want to recommend. Does anyone want to volunteer to talk about a good movie first? Or I've got a couple this week, actually.
Maybe you should go first then. I don't know.
Well, one movie I saw, and this was at the recommendation. I'll give a shout out. This is a recommendation of Matt Bird. He was talking about how he discovered that he Stuart and Matt often spar about movies. They don't have the same tastes.
I like if you describe it as them sparring. I imagine at some point that the phrase "Avast ye" is said during the.
I think you would enjoy this movie, Stuart. He discovered that they have the Fox Movie Channel.
It's a good channel,
which is something that I had known for some time. But he was talking about
that's a channel where you can say in the afternoon, you know what? I would like to see The Ghost and Mrs. Muir again, and then Porky's Revenge. Oh, they're back to back. This is great.
And Porky's Revenge is also back to back with Porky's 2 the next day. That's the other thing. If you want to see two Porky's movies in a row.
And then Porky's 2 the next day is back to back with All Quiet on the Western Front. It's like, oh, this is a great movie from the 30s.
Turk,
oh, okay,
Turk
great.
182.
Just One of the Guys is up next.
Just snorted.
True enough. But I was watching, he recommended The Laughing Policeman, starring Walter Matthau. And Walter Matthau, known mainly for comedy, but during the 70s, people were like, let's put Walter Matthau in some thrillers. And, he made some great thrillers, The Taking of Pelham 123, which
fantastic
I know
movie.
Is a great
That's
favorite of yours.
One of the best, most awesomest movies ever.
What's the other one? The one where he was a thief.
You're thinking of Charlie Varick.
Charlie Varick, another.
Which is not as good, but it's still pretty good.
Still very good.
That's the one where he's like catnip to women. Women can't get enough of Walter Matthau and Charlie Varick. And it's so weird because he doesn't do anything different. He's just the same guy. But women love him. Yeah, oh, he's
a malign paradigm shift.
The Laughing Policeman is a movie I've never seen that I've wanted to see.
Oh, it's very good. It's not as good, I think, as either of those two movies, but it's still very good. And the funny, it's him and it's Bruce Dern. Mm-hmm. And it's one of these movies where you're like, when but in the 1970s would they be like, let's make a cop thriller and let's make the two leads, Walter Matthau and Bruce Dern.
When, except the 70s, would they make a movie and say, let's make the two leads, Walter Matthau and Bruce
Dern? Yeah, exactly.
This was in an era when Elliot Gould could open a movie successfully.
Yeah, and it's so, the director is the guy who did Cool Hand Luke, and it's long on atmosphere and long on sort of the mundane police procedural stuff, but it's also the most 1970s movie you can imagine. It's got Louis Gossett Jr.
Every scene starts with him holding up a newspaper and saying, look at that date. December 14th, 1972.
Well, aside from Matthau and an extravagant.
Who are you voting for? President Nixon? Really? I'm going to vote for McGovern.
Aside from Matthau and an extravagantly mustachioed Bruce Dern.
I can't wait till Star Wars comes out. I know what you're saying.
And they had Louis Gossett Jr. putting the smackdown on a jive-talking pimp. There's a scene, there's like an inexplicable scene in the middle where they go to talk to the Hell's Angels, who are their like connection for like weapons. I don't know, it's just really great. I mean, not a great movie to watch if you are offended by the 1970s views on homosexuality.
Mm.
It won't win any GLAAD awards, but if you can put your mind in
there aren't any good uses of trash bags in the movie.
I'm just saying that,
get it, GLAAD? Anyway, you were saying? A material. This is my A material.
Yikes. I'm going to stop talking about this movie. You've taken all the wind out of my sails.
I'm sorry. But you're saying it's good.
It's good. And also, I want to mention, I watched, my wife bought her company had a sale where a bunch of, among other things, a bunch of really cheap DVDs were on sale. And she picked up the Peter Sellers box set for like $2. And you know what? The Peter Sellers box set, made up of not great Peter Sellers movies. It's got What's New Pussycat and Casino Royale, known for being not very good and very awful, the two of those. The Pink Panther, probably actually one of the lesser Pink Panther films, the original Pink Panther. But also I watched The Party, which I enjoyed quite a lot, despite outside of Short Circuit being maybe the most stereotypical portrayal of a Indian person by a white actor. But it also had a lot of fun, it was a good sound era throwback to silent films, and it felt like The Laughing Policeman, completely of its time, like a totally 1960s film. So I enjoyed both of those.
Considering it involves a party at a Hollywood mansion, which is broken up by hippies parading a painted elephant. It's pretty 60s, yeah.
I think.
I used some footage from that today at work.
Also, constant Mancini music. You did?
Yeah, well, because for this thing about the orgy that that Governor Spitzer's going to throw before he gets out of office.
Yeah, this does not count as a Daily Show spoiler, because Daily Show will have aired long before this podcast comes out.
That bit will actually air in about 6 minutes, maybe less.
Well, let's stop the podcast and watch it, shall we?
No, let's not.
All right, well, let's go on. Anyone else have a recommendation?
I don't know if I'd say I'd super recommend either of these, but I watched two movies recently.
Do tell.
Earlier, so I watched Live Free Die Hard, and there was a lot of explosions, and the internet was really important, and
as it is in daily life,
and
modern world.
The thing that I was obsessed with the movie, the thing that I just couldn't get over, is the fact that there's a point where Timothy Olyphant, the bad guy,
Star of Hitman.
Yeah. He like tells some like jet fighter, like F-16 jet fighter, that like the semi truck that Bruce Willis is driving is a terrorist, and so they should blow it up. And this fucking F-16 dude, like the guy driving this fucking jet fighter, is the craziest hot dog I've ever seen. Like he's like going underneath fucking overpasses and shit on the highway, and like. He gets his fucking jet exploded because he's like fucking like 10 feet away from the semi trailer underneath an overpass, and a big chunk of concrete falls in the jet turbine and blows it up. And I just can like imagine this guy thinking as he ejects, like, ooh, mission accomplished.
That's
job well done.
That's what makes America's Air Force great, Stuart.
So, yeah, that was really good. And then last night I watched a movie that I'm not quite sure how I feel about, and that was the William Friedkin thriller Bug.
Oh, I've heard that's a movie that looked so stupid, and then it got really good reviews, and I was surprised by that.
Yeah, it's I wouldn't necessarily say it's stupid. It's also not like amazing. It's just kind of like it's got some atmosphere. It's kind of creepy, and there's not a lot of like actually Judd doesn't look that hot in it, even though she's naked, and I think you see her bush. So
They should have called the movie Bush, and it would have done a lot better business.
You're always good for a nude scene report, Stuart.
Yeah, well, that's important. Oh, Live Free Die Hard took me a while, but I figured out the girl who plays John McClane's daughter is one of the girls from the Death Proof segment of Grindhouse.
Sure. Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Which one is that?
The cute one in the cheerleader outfit.
As opposed to all the ugly ones.
As opposed to the hideous women in that.
I've got a thing for like big-eyed, dark-eyed brunettes with bangs. So.
Dressed like cheerleaders.
Yeah. In Quentin Tarantino films.
Very specific.
Yeah, well, that's why I have to pay $5,500 for a prostitute. Yeah.
Topical.
Yeah, it won't be by the time this podcast comes out.
So, the podcast is ripped from last week's headlines.
Can I, as a summary then, Live Free, Die Hard, Bug,
That's the best rating system ever.
We should switch up the whole
the most
rating
nuanced
system
rating system
to that.
It's like Chinese.
A completely, completely
different words there.
Noise inflection-based rating system.
Okay, Elliot, fucking the pressure's on, dude.
The pressure is on, let me
Have
tell you.
You watch any movies?
Oh, I've watched a ton of movies. The problem is I watch so many movies that I forget them almost as soon as I watch them. But I can name two that I watched recently that I liked that I can recommend to different type of people. One was the Barbara Stanwyck, Henry Fonda murder mystery comedy, The Mad Miss Manton. Which is not it's not as well known, I guess, as it should be, because I thought it was really funny. And there's one scene in particular that's very sexy and very intimate between the two of them in the middle of this really funny, just kind of slapsticky, crazy movie where Barbara Stanwyck is basically a rich airhead who gets into trouble and witnesses a murder, and no one believes her because she's famous for causing shenanigans, as rich people did in the 30s. And she and her group of airhead rich women have to solve this murder, and Henry Fonda's a reporter who first – the thing – usually in these movies, the woman is in love with the man, and the man's like, get away from me, you're crazy, and the woman wins him over. In this one, Henry Fonda hates her, then abruptly turns and is like, I love this woman. I'm going to marry her, and she wants nothing to do with him. And there's just these great moments where he's all about, we're going to get married. This is great. I love you forever. And she's like, I don't even know you that well. What? It's just really – it's funny the way they do it. But I'm not selling it clearly. But there's one scene where – Yikes. She's lying in bed in a hospital, I think, and he's come to visit her, and he lights a cigarette that's in her mouth, and it's all very sweet, and then he's looking out a window, and they just have this conversation that has jokes in it, but the way they deliver it is very natural, and it's like this nice, funny moment, but it's not like funny like, that's the way it happened, wah, wah, wah. But it's funny like, oh, these sounds like jokes that could be delivered from one person to another across a hospital room. And the other movie, I'm actually near the end right now of Robert Altman's Kansas City. I've been watching movies and pieces, and I have to say that I'm not enjoying it as much as I would have liked.
Okay.
A Robert Altman movie set in the 30s, which involves gangsters and jazz music and a kidnapping and Jennifer Jason Leigh talking like this. Yeah. Hey, get over there, Palooka. Well, let's go. And I thought, this is going to be great. And
right up your alley.
It's very much a movie that Robert Altman seems to be not interested in. It's obvious he wanted to make a movie about...
Like the Gingerbread Man.
He wanted to make a movie about jazz musicians and was like, I guess I need a plot for this movie about jazz musicians. So I'll have a kidnapping, but no one really seems to worry about it that much. And then there's a lot of scenes of jazz musicians playing. What struck me was that this came out, I guess, in the mid-90s. And it's with tons of period cars, period outfits. All the buildings are from the period. So it's like, was this the last big-budget movie Robert Altman made? Like, this is post The Player. And the others, the only movies I can think of after that besides Gingerbread Man are, like, Cookie's Fortune.
Right.
Or, you know, the Dr. Company. T and the Women, The Company. Like, very small-scale films. Even
Gosford Park.
Well, Gosford Park's a little bigger budget, I guess. But even that, like, they don't need that many sets. It just takes place in the one house. Like, Robert Altman, did you throw away your last big budget on this movie that you didn't seem to care that much about? I don't know.
So, the ghost of Robert Altman.
So, I'd have to say, using this new rating system, Kansas City, Mavis Manton,
You're getting it.
That's pretty good. Well,
a couple more podcasts, and then you'll be right.
A couple more podcasts, and this will sweep the nation.
Nice.
I want to
Water cooler.
You'll see movie reviews that's in big letters say, and then like parentheses, in a good way.
Nice.
The flop house.
At the water cooler, people will be like, did you see, I don't know, what's that game show with the briefcases?
Deal or No Deal?
Yeah, they'll be like, did you see Deal or No Deal? Just like that. And they're like, no, well, I thought it was more of an and you get it.
Oh, I thought of another movie I saw recently. I saw the movie Far From Heaven, the Todd Haynes film. And I guess it gets across the point really well that the 1950s were not a great time for black people or gay people. So if you were under the impression it were.
Another moral that we really needed to.
Go see that movie.
I'm glad I took a stand on that one.
I'm boldly taking a stand against gay people and black people being oppressed in the 50s.
I don't want us to go over time again because last time it resulted in us losing
some
of our
fucking
audio
choice
file.
Shit.
Ironically, that was the good podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Oh man, if you could only have heard that.
Oh.
I gotta cut it out. Say. It's reminding me too much of the Home Improvement sound effects made by Tim Allen.
Quickly, I want to run down the business and then we can get out of here.
Get out of the internet.
I want to say visit theflophousepodcast.blogspot.com. Once you're there, you'll notice that we have a new logo courtesy of my brother John, who designed it. Thank you, John, for letting me take advantage of you and not pay you for it.
It's a lot of good, solid American names in your family. Dan McCoy, John McCoy.
Robert
McCoy. Yeah. These are the names I would expect to see on signs on small businesses.
Well, I'll commend my parents when I see them next. Also, once you're there, there's Flophouse forums that you can sign up for and discuss the shows or leave us a comment. Write theflophouse@gmail.com if you have any feedback. We might address it on the air.
That was the Flophouse podcast.
Theflophousepodcast@gmail.com. You're right. I screwed it up last time. It's theflophousepodcast@gmail.com.
So much fan mail that's just going by the wayside.
I know. Yeah.
That's going to that flaccid penis fetish website, the Flophouse. Why are people talking about our podcast as being so great? We still can't get the podcast tech thing up. I guess they like pictures of flaccid penises.
And lastly, I want to say, if you've enjoyed the show in the past, but the thing that's been holding you back from recommending it to your friends has been the shitty sound quality. Now that we have three microphones, I want you to go out and tell everyone you know to listen to the podcast. And you know what else?
Until Dan listens to this and realizes the three of us just have terrible voices.
Yeah, well, that could be it. But also, go to Podcast Alley and vote for us, because I'll tell you what. I went there, and you can search. You can see what the top...
You can do that on the internet?
You can go there, and you can see what the top podcasts are by category. And so, in the comedy categories, the top podcast for March, We're ranked at 101.
Ah,
holy now, shit.
So close.
Now, do you want to guess, do you want to hazard a guess for the number, the top number, the absolute highest number of podcasts that can be listed on one screen at a time is?
I'm guessing 100.
Yes, it is 100.
What's the number? What's the number one highest rated podcast? Just like the Dane Cook podcast or something?
We don't want to. We don't want to promote.
Because I want to listen to that one. It's probably great.
You're losing the script. The point is,
it's a bad movie podcast if the guys.
If just a couple of people go there and vote for us, we can finally get bumped up to that 100 page. Maybe we'll be at number 88. Maybe number 87.
Can we quit our jobs then?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. That's how the internet works.
Awesome. Nice.
Tell if you have any listeners in Michigan or Florida. This is a chance for their vote to count.
Yeah, the one chance this year.
Topical.
But
they can vote in the general election.
Nope. I'm taking that power away just so they can they'll vote for this. And the thing is, if you voted in the past, unlike the general election, you can vote a couple times. You can vote once a month. So I would recommend that if you enjoy the show, you go back every month and you vote. That's all I'm saying.
And send us emails with pictures.
Yeah, send Stuart emails with pictures.
At the Flophouse podcast
@gmail.com. Sure. So anyway,
it's the Flophouse Podcast.
The Flophouse Podcast @gmail.com, because I wanted it to be the longest and most ungainly email
the
address.
Email people get tired of typing halfway through and decide they didn't want to send that letter all that
Fuck
much.
Fuck it. Fuck
the
those jerks.
Flop. How much more of this address is there?
I'm too busy.
I've fallen asleep. Oh, I'm walking around the hospital all of a sudden. Anyway, on that note of tying it all together, I'd like to say that I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
I continue to be Elliot Kalin.
Thanks for listening to The Flophouse. Good night. So a few things that I'd like to say now that we've got these extra microphones.
Yeah.
Number one.
Check.
I want to say that a lot.
Check. Sibilance. Yeah.
Check. I would recommend Check. Number one, putting your drink on the floor or some other place.
Or in your belly.
It's not that much harder to pick it up from the floor. number two.
Fucking to be a little soldier.